It's extra time.
He shoots and it's a goal.
Hello and welcome back to Extra Time, the podcast that comes to you via YouTube and, of course, your favourite podcast app. It's me, Patrick Van Straten, your host, and today I'm joined by podcast favourites Henry Hill. Hello, Henry.
Hello.
And Zach Jellup. Hello, Zach.
Hello. How you doing, mate?
I'm good. How are you two? How are things going?
I'm good. You know, weather's not been great recently. However, slowly but surely, we're all starting to appear out of our caves like cavemen.
Yeah.
I look it, I'll tell you that. I'm trying to hope that I don't have to get Sunny to cut my hair again before I can go to the barbers, but I might have to get in the kite this weekend.
Zach, why don't you just follow my lead and just whip it all off? You know, start fresh.
I don't ever want to shave my head all off until I'm in my least 50s. But for you, you rock it, Henry. That's the thing, you rock it. I don't have as much going for me like you do.
That's very kind. I think I said to my housemate... I said to my housemate, give me like an Eden Hazard. I said, I want an Eden Hazard, but I think I've ended up with like a, I've ended up with a meek version of Conor McGregor. I'd say, look like his pathetic English cousin.
I honestly think you look good. I think if you grew the beard, we spoke about it before, but if you grew the beard out a bit, I think you'd be a right 10 out of 10, mate.
Oh, that's if only the girls I was talking to on Hinge were as complimentary as you.
Are they all rating you out of 10?
that's my go-to line. Go on. What do you think out of 10?
Mark's out of 10. Thank you.
Oh, dear. Oh, it's so tragic because it's true. Right. Let's crack on.
I can't imagine. I mean, I might actually come back to dating in lockdown towards the end, but we're going to start off with a word from our sponsors. Once again, this episode is brought to you by Beer 52, our friends over there, and they're going to be your friends too, heading into the summer. Because obviously, we don't have the freedom to go out to pubs yet or to bars, so why not get the party delivered to you? Now, with Beer 52, you can get a free case of 8 craft beers, sourced and curated from the best breweries on the planet. And all you have to do is go to beer52.com/extra. That's beer52.com/extra and cover the £5.95 for postage. So the case is delivered direct to your door. They theme each delivery. So past themes have included New Zealand, South Africa, Korea, all over the USA and Europe. Painstakingly sourced and delivered to 150,000 members. Obviously as well, if you don't like dark beer, you can actually go to the website and choose the light option. And this will mean that you'll get, you know, some nicer like Weiss beers maybe if you don't like a particularly heavy one, which I don't. You also get a copy of award-winning beer magazine Ferment and a tasty snack. And if you change your mind, you can cancel the subscription at any point. So if you go to beer52.com/extra, pay £5.95 and you can get your first case of 8 beers. It's pretty exciting. What are you guys drinking in lockdown? Are you beering it or are you sampling
other everything wares? And anything, to be quite honest. I have had a lot of beer, but just every Friday, I reckon me and the boys just go, screw it, let's just get hammered. We start playing FIFA together and just doing like forfeit FIFA for every time we concede or the ball goes out. So don't really remember a lot of Fridays in lockdown, to be quite honest.
Oh my God. I feel like I've been trying to get drunk and like failing. I either like am in a situation where one drink gets me drunk, or when I want to get drunk, I'll have like 4 drinks and feel like I've had nothing. No. It's incredibly annoying.
Even now, even beforehand, to be honest, once I've had one, I'm just feeling gone.
Yeah. I mean, we're trying to do a thing called Park Life, where every Wednesday we go to a different park and we try a different beer. That's like our sort of weekly activity to look forward to at the moment. So we've been doing that. But it's good because all the pubs near us have opened and they've got like a bit more of an interesting selection of beers, and they're like doing it out of sort of milk cartons and stuff like that. So we're able to at least get a bit of like different drink and head off, which has been quite fun actually, because similar to you, Zach, I think I think maybe a bit too much drinking, but at the moment I look forward to normality again.
I would love to drink a bit. See, I'm not a huge beer guy generally, like I can't have beer after beer after beer, but the idea of having one, did you say out of a milk carton?
Yeah, no, they've been
that sounds great.
I don't know, it feels wrong, but it's right at the same time.
Oh my God.
Oh dear. Yeah, but no, it's good. I think it's important. You can get in a rut of just having the same beers over and over again. So yeah, got to mix it up.
Yeah, well, beer52.com is going to be your friend there, man. You can do 8 different parks with 8 new beers.
That's true. I actually signed up my dad to beer52 last week. So I do recommend it. It was a good birthday gift. I thought, better.
Perfect. Well, today's podcast topic is unsurprisingly the return of the Premier League, as this is going to go out the day before the Premier League returns, with Aston Villa versus Sheffield United and then Man City versus Arsenal. Both huge clashes between teams competing for the Champions League and teams struggling against relegation. Obviously, I think that the title race is not particularly suspenseful.
Yeah.
Liverpool are 6 points away from confirming the title with 9 games to go. But with City banned from the Champions League, obviously fifth place is now a UCL spot. And almost anyone has a shot at that position, because Crystal Palace, down in 11th, are only 6 points off Man United, who are currently in fifth. And the relegation battle is extremely tight. Mm. So, guys, what are you looking forward to when the league comes back? What, Zach, what do you think we can expect to see? Is there, are there any teams that are going to have benefited from the time off? Ooh. Are there any teams that are, well, that are going to be like seriously worried?
I think if you're a Spurs fan, it's unbelievable. I mean, you were looking at the rest of your season with no Heung-min Son, no Harry Kane, arguably the two most important players in that squad. And now they've got them back to hopefully full fitness, or is it close to fitness as they can possibly be, and ready for the rest of the season, which they need to try and get Champions League football. Now, we don't obviously know about what's going to happen to City. I think we find out next week, but I think most clubs who are looking for Champions League football will be going in trying to get fourth place no matter what, even if City do end up losing their Champions League spot. So Tottenham are definitely happy they've had this time off, obviously due to unforeseen circumstances. Chelsea is another team who have also struggled with injuries. Pulisic was out quite a bit. Tammy Abraham was also out. Callum Hudson-Odoi had suffered injuries. Some of the defence had also done so. And so I think they're going to benefit it as well. I mean, the couple of games that Chelsea have, they still have to face Man City and Liverpool, along with Wolves too. So they've got some tough fixtures ahead. So having a team fully fit and fighting is what they'll need. So they're the first two that kind of come to mind, and I think they'll benefit the most out of having this time off.
Mm. Henry, we've got quite a few teams in the mix for Champions League who are not kind of traditional Premier League powers. Crystal Palace, Burnley, Sheffield United, Wolves, and even Leicester, though I think at this point we kind of all assume Leicester are going to get a Champions League place. Do you see any of the others realistically challenging for Champions League, or would you expect them to fall away over these last 10 games?
I think if you look at the table, the only one I'd say really could go for it is Wolves. I think they've got the quality. Sheffield United, we discussed this with Dave a few weeks ago. I think they don't have the strength and depth to potentially deal with whatever injuries could be coming their way, because this is going to be, it's going to be really interesting to see how teams can cope with just rushing straight back into it. I mean, there's a lot of football to be played over a very short period of time. I think Wolves are probably the most adept because they've been playing Europa League all year, and yet that doesn't seem to faze them at all. And if they can convert some of the draws into wins, I think they've got a really good chance. But yeah, I mean, look, if Burnley finish in the top five, I will shave all my hair off live on this podcast. I don't think it's amusing they're in the discussion, but I don't think they've got a chance at all. But I mean, Burnley have had a fantastic year, actually. I think lots to be said for them. But yeah, I really do think this could be the making of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I think the next 9 games could be, because if you think about it, they've been doing really well in the Europa League as well. If he can lead them into the top four against a lot of the hatred that he's had, a lot of people expecting him to fail and drop off all the time, you know, that United team, I think, are going to go into this period looking really strong. Bruno Fernandes was excellent when he came in. Ighalo was, I think, about as one of the most surprise signings of January. I think he's done brilliantly. And I think if you look at their fixtures going into this period, Manchester United really could be the ones to sort of cement their place. And, you know, Leicester City's form isn't definite all the time. They can jump up and down. But, you know, United finish against Southampton, Crystal Palace, West Ham United, and then play Leicester City. So I really think this could be their moment to sort of reassert themselves in the top four, which could then push them on for next year quite strongly.
And it's quite impressive that they've managed all this despite the losses they've had around the squad. So, I mean, obviously, Pogba's been out for the entire season. Rashford has missed, you know, now half the campaign. Like, these are really important players to them. And so, yeah, I completely agree. If they manage to finish in that, in those Champions League places, it'll be a remarkable performance, especially, I think, because the race is so close this year. Like, yes, you could argue that the race for the Champions League is close because the bigger teams have underperformed, but you could also say a lot of the teams below them have overperformed, I think. And they've got the chance, I guess, to kind of solidify their position in fifth spot on that first weekend back when they go away to Tottenham Hotspur, which could be a really, really big game. I mean, in a way, there's a part of this, if it weren't for the lack of fans, that would kind of be the perfect situation, because in theory, everyone should go into the season with everyone should go into these last 10 games of the season with like a fully fit squad.
Yeah.
So that's a, like, as an Arsenal fan, you know, like, we've obviously had Kieran Tierney out pretty much all season. Relatively recently before the lockdown, Lucas Torreira got a long-term injury, and it looks like those guys are going to be either fully fit or close to full fitness when the league comes back. And, you know, Arsenal have got an away game at Spurs, have got the visit of Liverpool.
City first game.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a game in hand, so that's just a write-off.
Sorry, Pat, how do you think Jose Mourinho is going to cope? Because he's lost his main excuse. The thing that he has been able to grumble about all year, which is the lack of players, because I think, is it Steven Bergwijn? He's coming back as well. Mm-hmm. He's going to be available. He doesn't really have... If his team begin to underperform now, obviously he could just blame it on the break and the fact that not everyone's up to speed, but it's the same for everyone. So I think he's lost his main go-to excuse for why this year is just a building year and he's just sort of getting ready. So do you think this could actually put him under a bit more pressure?
If he doesn't perform, certainly, yeah, because I completely agree. Like, whenever you have a load of injuries in your squad, everyone will say, well, look, it's just the injuries. And he was kind of able to sell this idea as well of Ndombele, right, as the scapegoat. Said, oh, Ndombele, like, he's just not playing the way he should. Even though he was quite clearly not at 100% fitness, I thought. Like, you could see by the way he was running. You know when someone's running and they're trying not to hurt their back? Like, he just seemed like he wasn't entirely at the races. So, yeah, I think that Jose Mourinho has already burnt a lot of his goodwill at Tottenham. And if they definitely don't push on, given that they are only 4 points off Man United and they face Man United and they face Arsenal, you kind of think that they could get themselves in a lot of trouble. But let's move on from the Champions League race then. I'll come back to you for a prediction at the end. You know, I'm going to come to Zach because you haven't spoken for a bit, though technically when it comes to relegation, Henry, as a Fulham fan, should be the expert. But Zach, it looks like there's kind of a 16 group now that separated itself from the rest of the league and is now firmly in the relegation battle.
Yeah. I mean, Brighton are slightly ahead. They're 2 points ahead of Bournemouth, who are in 18th, and Brighton are in 15th, with West Ham and Watford in between them, all on 27. So they've got a little bit of an advantage. Aston Villa, though, who they have a game in hand, but they'll be playing Sheffield United. So that is a massive, massive game for them on the first day of the season when it returns for them. If they can get those 3 points, that could essentially help them rescue the rest of their season and not be relegated. I think Norwich is done, to be quite honest. I think Norwich City have a couple of really, really good players in Todd Cantwell, in Aarons, even in Buendia as well. So they'll probably get picked apart if they were to fall back down to the Championship. But I mean, they've got 21 points. Aston Villa have a game and have 25 points. So they all need to be winning a lot of their remaining fixtures, which I just don't see possible. Especially as the man who was the front of that attack, Timo Pukki, and was killing at the beginning of the season, has barely done anything in the second half of the season. So I do think Norwich are gone for. I think the others, though, the rest of them, the other five teams, are interesting. That could swing either way. I mean, Watford are a bit more difficult because they've had some players not be able to train with them having contracted the virus and meaning because they'll have to return to the team later on in the season. So they are at a disadvantage compared to other teams. So that's going to be interesting how that plays out. As for Bournemouth, I feel like Bournemouth every year recently have this negative run, but somehow always managed to escape the relegation zone. So I feel like they'll be okay. And then it's really between Brighton, West Ham and Watford. I think the whole season, West Ham fans have just half expected that suddenly they'll stick it on and be fine again. But it's not happened yet. And they haven't got many games to kind of fix it. So I'll be in. That is arguably as interesting as the Champions slash Europe places, to be quite honest. I hope I hope Watford don't fall just due to unforeseen circumstances, but it may work out that way.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean, Henry, do you have a prediction for which of these teams are going to go down? I think we could probably all agree on Norwich, like especially if Aston Villa do win that game in hand, because then Norwich will be 6 points adrift of the team above them, and that is a lot to make up. But Bournemouth have a very difficult run.
Yeah, that's true.
Is there anyone here that you think has the minerals to pull away, and anyone who you think is going to be looking below them, getting quite scared?
Well, first of all, I think Norwich are going to get relegated with their heads held high. I don't think it's going to be like a Huddersfield situation where we see them completely fall apart. I think Norwich, it's sort of they've just not quite been good enough. I don't think they've shown any sort of... I think they've been classy. They've been really good at moments, and I think they've got a great manager, and they've probably got the ability to sort of go again next year. So I don't think there's any concerns there. A bit like Fulham in the Championship this year, one might say. But yeah, I think... I know you, Zach, you said you think Bournemouth could have a run-in, but I don't think this is the year. I just don't think they...
Fair.
For every good signing they make, they've wasted about 15 million on someone else who hasn't really come to the race. And this year, their top scorer is Callum Wilson on 7, who's really been nowhere near the kind of form that he needs. And then there's Harry Wilson after that. They don't really have a goal scorer on form at the moment. And looking at their fixtures, it's really tough. I mean, they've got Manchester City, they play United. If they don't beat Crystal Palace in their first game back, and that's never... shooing 3 points for a team in the bottom half of the table, then they've got Wolves, Newcastle, United, Tottenham, and then Leicester City, and then Man City. So I feel like this could be the year that they fall down. And I to be honest, I wouldn't be too upset if they did get relegated. I feel like they've never really kicked on and shown. I think sort of the Eddie Howe hype is maybe a bit unjustified at times. But also, I think West Ham are really sleepwalking towards relegation. I really think. They are. Brighton play a more attractive style of football. I think Neil Mopé up front really could get some really important goals to them. But yeah, I think West Ham, the team that needs to look over their shoulder, because if they're not careful, they're the ones who could drop down. Then by no means safe at all. And especially if you look at Watford, they've got Nigel Pearson. When you've got players like Troy Deeney, who really know how to ingrain a bit of fighting spirit, I think they've... And Ismaili Sarr, I think he is going to be brilliant. If they can stay up, I think Ismaili Sarr is going to be one of the standout players of the Premier League next year. He's a quality signing. I was quite surprised that Watford were the team that got him. And they showed against Liverpool what they can do when they play with a bit of belief. So I really do think they've got the kind of grit to stay up. But for me, yeah, it's West Ham and Bournemouth that could be staring at the drop.
I think you're right. The only thing I would say quickly is just Troy Deeney is so important to that team. And he won't be there at the start, at least at the start. So that's the only thing that I kind of... He is the forefront of their attack, and he is kind of how everything they do go through him in some way or another. So that's why I feel a little bit less confident about Watford. I do think they might struggle just due to not having their players there.
I just think they'll be harder to beat than the other teams. I think they, even without Troy Deeney, I think they could still grind out a point where you might not expect them to. I still think they've got that kind of defensive... They've got that defensive like hold that should be able to see them through. But yeah, I mean, Aston Villa, I think, is the real wild card. They could go either way. They could either blitz so everyone true. Or get absolutely, you know, just win 1-5 and then lose the next 2-4 and the 4-0. So it's really hard to say of Aston Villa. I'm not sure. What do you think about that one, Pato?
I don't really know. I was just looking at West Ham's fixtures, actually. Because I kind of want to think that they've got too much quality to get dragged back, but they've got Wolves, then they've got Spurs, then they've got Chelsea, they've also got Burnley, they've got Man United. On the other hand, they've got 4 fixtures against Newcastle, Norwich, Watford and Villa. So if they can get a couple of wins in there, they're probably all right. And maybe an unexpected one elsewhere. But the thing with West Ham is they're not really going to, what you were talking about, grind out those unexpected points. Whereas Watford, you know, like Watford have got, they've got fewer losses than West Ham. They've got more draws. And so I do feel that Watford could go away to a team like, you know, they could go to a team like Wolves or something and get an unexpected point. Whereas West Ham are kind of amazing and the attack all clicks and they win or they get absolutely battered. They've conceded 50 league goals. The only teams to have conceded more are Villa and Norwich City. And generally speaking, a bad defence is a sign that you're going down. As for Villa, it is truly hard to say. Like, their attack is, it's better than most of the teams around them, like, they've scored more goals than Bournemouth, Watford, Norwich, Brighton. I mean, obviously, teams like Crystal Palace as well. They've scored as many as Burnley up in 10th. But they're not good defensively. And if somebody like Grealish, I think we all agree that, like, say Grealish got injured first game back, we'd be like, bye. Yeah. Bye, Villa. Yeah. Like, there's no way. Though John McGinn, I think we assume John McGinn should be back.
Yeah, true.
So that could be important, but I don't like... It's weird that they went out and spent so much money in the summer and they're still kind of a one-man team. Like, that is troubling for me. But, God, I don't know. Zach, you give me your predictions for relegation first and then I'll tell you mine.
So I think we're all on agreement, Norwich 20th. And I do agree with Henry. Like, they've gone out fighting. They have played fantastic football, and I mean, they nearly gave Liverpool run for their money when they played them at their ground. I will then say Bournemouth and then Watford. I think Aston Villa are going to escape. I think West Ham, as we said, you like to believe they have too much quality to go down, and if they do, then they're just going to get absolutely raided. And Brighton seem quite safely ahead. I mean, Brighton haven't actually lost as many games as the others. They've only lost 12. They've just drawn a lot with 11. So if they can kind of change that, then they should be right. But yeah, I'll go Norwich, Bournemouth, Watford.
I'll agree with Norwich and Bournemouth, but I'm looking at Villa's fixtures. and I'm kind of thinking Villa are going down. Villa start out with Sheffield United, then Chelsea, yeah, then away at Newcastle, which is not an easy fixture, then Wolves, then Liverpool, then Man United.
Oh, God.
Then they've got Palace at home, which I think they can win, then Everton away, then Arsenal, and then West Ham. And so if you were to say how many of those fixtures are winnable,
it's
maybe 3.5.
Yeah, God, if Jack Grealish does get an injury, which is a possibility, so, because we've got no idea how players are going to react to this restart, they are screwed.
I think 36 points is what teams are going to need minimum. I think it could be. I don't think the 40-point mark will matter this year. I can only see like you said just there, Pato, three wins each maybe for some of these teams.
Yeah, I'm going to say that Watford will stay up. I think West Ham will probably just have enough. I think Brighton are not that seriously in this battle. Yeah. So I'm going to go Norwich, Villa, Bournemouth. I think the current bottom three are heading down.
I actually think West Ham might benefit from playing with no crowd. I think they might actually relax in their home stadium for once. They could be the only team that sort of think, thank God this is all behind closed doors, because they just get abused every time they play. So they might actually, that could be their saving grace, not having any of their fans there just to tell them how crap they are the whole time.
Yeah, if this had happened 2 years ago, like, Arsene Wenger would have got another season at Arsenal because no one would have been there booing him.
I mean, you're not wrong, probably. You're definitely not wrong. Like, so if he'd lost to Brentford in the little warm-up bit, who knows?
Look, there's no shame losing to Brentford. Especially when David Luiz was like, God, acting, you know, like he just signed for Real Madrid and they're doing like keepy uppies in front of the crowd. He was doing that in the middle of the pitch and just got absolutely robbed by like three Brentford players. And then you can see the moment where he looks at them and he thinks, I could run back, but I'm 33. there's absolutely no chance. Who are you guys looking forward to watching the most when you come back? I mean, Henry, I think I completely agree with you about Ismaïla Sarr. But who else are you excited about watching for the run-in?
I think Wolves are going to be really interesting. I think Wolves are going to be a side who really do have the potential to not just get Europa League, possibly Champions League if things go their way. I think the last game of the season they have is Chelsea, so that could be a possibility of trying to go for a Champions League place. And the players they have in that squad are of Champions League quality. I mean, and I wouldn't be surprised if any of the summer signings that they bring in would even help reinforce that squad, which is frightening to think about as essentially a rival fan now because they're trying to get Champions League football. So they're going to be really interesting, and they do play pretty nice football. Arsenal, I actually am interested, mainly just to see, this could be Aubameyang's last season with your voice. So it'd be nice to see him bow out, possibly. But in all seriousness as well, like some of the guys that you've got coming up as well, I feel like maybe you'll give a bit more time to Martinelli. Finally try and see Kieran Tierney play a bit of football with his tucked in shirt.
That'll be
pretty decent. And of course, Chelsea for myself, like I'm dead interested to see Ruben Loftus-Cheek play, who is essentially a new signing now. even though he's 24 years old. That's going to be pretty interesting too. So I think both sides of the table, I'll be honest, I'm going to end up watching every game at least for the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, it does look like we'll be able to watch absolutely everything. I just want just before I come on to the players you're looking forward to, Henry, I just wanted to say that, like, is there any part of you that's disappointed, as amazing as these signings of Ziyech and Timo Werner have been? Is there any part of you that's disappointed that this project of giving the academy players lots of minutes seems like it might be over already? Like, I'm not going to call that too early because, you know, who knows? Like, I don't know what Frank Lampard's plans are. But last summer, a lot of Chelsea fans were really excited that finally all their talented youngsters were going to get a ton of minutes. And now it seems a year on that already we're kind of like, well, maybe Tammy Abraham drops to the bench. You know, maybe we see less of Mount because Ziyech's coming in, you know, and Kai Havertz is rumoured as well. Like, is there any part of you that's conflicted?
I would say, I think, yes, slightly. I mean, there is reason to be worried. I mean, these boys have had their first full season. And the thing is, right, is they have come into the Premier League and not stopped. Tammy Abraham has been playing every single game. We've seen that affect him in the latter stage of the season with him picking up injuries and maybe looking a little bit fatigued in parts. So I personally think it's actually good that we are bringing in players like Timo Werner, like Hakim Ziyech. We've got to remember as well, it looks like Willian and Pedro are going to leave. So we need at least one more winger to be joining. To give us a rotation. And with Chelsea's luck over the past couple of seasons, we do tend to get quite a few injuries during the season. So I don't think it's this is it, this is the end of Chelsea's youth development or anything like that, because I think we still are going to see it. Tomori, I expect to get even more minutes next season. Billy Gilmore, same with Reece James. So there are loads of players, and maybe even Ian Matson at left-back next season too, if this rumour about Ben Chilwell doesn't happen. And the thing is, like for Mason Mount, I'm pretty sure Mason Mount has basically played in every single minute apart from maybe one game, or featured in every game apart from one game this season, which is quite ridiculous to go from for not having made your debut for the club to then making it and playing in every single game apart from one. I think we need these kind of rotations and having players of good quality who we can rotate with, and to give us other options as well, like Hakim Ziyech does and like Timo Werner does, because Timo and Tammy aren't the same kind of guys. And you never know. Frank might just say, we'll go and play two up top next season and we still look like we're going to keep Giroud as well. What that means to Misha Batshuayi, I don't know. So I do think it's exciting, because they are also young stars that we're bringing in as well. And whereas previously it seemed like we were bringing in young stars like Eden Hazard and players weren't getting time then, I still do believe that they're going to be getting this, given this time, whilst also having these generational possible talents that could be playing for the club. Though it is surprising just quite how many players we're being linked to. I mean, Timo and Ziyech, I thought was great business, and now we've got Chilwell, Kai Havertz, Sancho rumours still happening. Like, it's ridiculous.
Well, obviously, I hope it's a disaster. But I don't think it is going to be. Henry, come on, finish us up with the player that you're most looking forward to watching once the season resumes.
The player. I'm excited to see Heung-min Son back to his full best. I think that'd be quite cool. I think he's one of my favourite players in the Premier League. I think, and with I am looking forward to seeing that Tottenham attack with Steven Bergwijn as well. I think that three could be quite, like, I think, because I never was really too taken on Eric Lamella, but now Lo Celso is looking really good as well. I'm quite excited to see how they all operate. I do really hope the Sheffield United fairy tale is complete. I do hope that they at least finish in like fifth or sixth. You know, I'd be a little bit heartbroken if they just dropped off now. I mean, also Everton as well. I think they've got a lot to prove. They're stuck in 12th at the moment, but I think they've, you know, this Carlo Ancelotti project has to show a bit of fruition at some point. And I know he's going to need a summer market to bring in an actual striker who can score a goal. But until then,
Calvert-Lewin, mate, what are you saying?
He has played well, but I think that's a classic case though, that he can, which is kind of what's being shown at Chelsea. He can be upgraded. I mean, you can't deny that Werner is a superior forward to Tammy Abraham based on everything that he's achieved this year, and that is exciting. Yeah. Hopefully, to see that all happen next year. But yeah, also, like, just to agree with Zach again, annoyingly, Loftus-Cheek. I think I love this kind of Leon Goretzka sort of big, powerful, attacking central midfielder. I think there's not many of them out there, and I think he's quality. So I'm looking forward to, hopefully, fingers crossed, see if he can get a string of games together. But yeah. It's so competitive at both ends of the table. It's just the middle section, which is pretty dull. It's so competitive to see what's going to happen, so I can't wait for it.
Yeah, the only thing keeping the middle section alive for me is the bet that you and I have, Henry, on where Newcastle are going to finish. So, 15th or lower.
I still think it's going to be fine. I'm looking forward to it. I think they've been hyping up.
I think you might win.
St Maximin will do a few funny dribbles, and next thing you know, points coming my way. So, yeah.
So Maximin, like, everybody goes on and on and on about him, and he's fun to watch, but I think he's got like a goal and two assists.
It's true, like, it's true.
Everyone's like, wow, he's lit the league up.
In that Newcastle squad, oh my days.
That is a fair point.
Jesus, great. He has to do so much.
I saw like Sky Sports, BBC and a few other outlets all did an article on him in the same week. And I sort of assume they're just copying each other. And I was thinking, looking at his stats, he's not really done anything to justify most of it. But he's cool. Yeah, it's true. But he's
enjoyable. Plus,
if the takeover goes through, then Jesus, the players he could be playing with next season, he might have 15 goals and 15 assists.
Well, maybe that's our bet for next year, Pato.
I will take that bet right.
What, 15 goals and 15 assists? Brilliant.
I'll take the under on that. Right, okay, guys. Well, that wraps up our Premier League roundup. But we're going to do an Anything But Football. This week's Anything But Football topic comes in from friend of the podcast Peter Jackson. That is the socialist teacher related to Dave Jackson as opposed to the director of the Lord of the Rings film. He wants to know what our favorite conspiracy theories are. Now, these don't necessarily have to be ones you believe in. Ooh. But your favorite conspiracy theories. Does either one of you have a favorite conspiracy theory? I feel like Henry, you might have one, but Zach has come straight in with a big
when I do look into conspiracy theories, I'm hooked every single time. But more, not necessarily that I believe them, but more I just find them interesting. But the ones that are coming to mind at the moment are just mainly like the ones that everyone kind of thinks of, where it's like the moon landing and all that kind of stuff, where it's like, because I remember people were like, oh, how can you leave footprints on the moon? And then it was tested and it was like, actually you can. I've always liked these stories that come out from people that have worked in like Area 51, and it's like there are aliens there, or I've seen something there, and like that kind of stuff I find so cool. I don't know if I guess it's a kind of a big conspiracy made up of loads. The aliens in Area 51 is something that I'd like to know. It's just the mystery of it. Like, I feel like if the government was just like, yeah, there's aliens, and they did that like 50 years ago, then we'd be like a bit more normalised about it now. But now that everyone's just, as it's always just a mystery, we're always just going to be wondering, and I hate not knowing. You know how I am. I'm impatient.
You say that though. Yeah, but what, that only works if there are aliens. Like, you're like, why didn't the government just tell us and then it would be normalised? But if there are no aliens and you just say to people, yeah, there are no aliens, then everybody says,
There are aliens.
I think we all know there are aliens. To be honest, the moon landing is not even my favourite moon conspiracy. Like, because there's also the conspiracy of the hollow moon, which is like amazing. Like the idea that the moon is hollow because like the craters on the moon, people say they're not deep enough, and that means there's like an armoured hull under the surface. And because like there were seismographs like planted on the moon at one point to measure moonquakes, you know, like because they have moonquakes on the moon, like we have earthquakes. And they described the moon as singing, you know, because it was like ringing like a bell. And they were like, oh, maybe it's hollow. And then people like David Icke. David Icke's theory is that the moon is hollow and it's a base from which the reptilians manipulate events on Earth.
Jesus.
Which is like just, it's just such a good, is an amazing moon conspiracy.
I like
I'm for it.
So I would love the moon landing to have been faked. That would be so funny if it came if it was just like, yeah, actually, we've just been fibbing you off this whole time. It was fake. I think that would just be the most amazing piece. I like the idea there's a few directors out there who all know what actually happened. But yeah, I mean, I think my favourite ones tend to be, when you said this is what we're going to do, is having a look. I love these kind of celebrities that are apparently still alive somewhere. So I love the idea that Elvis Presley's living in Maryland, still working, and also that he's been living in the Bahamas. But also there's this big theory that Paul McCartney dies and they replaced him with a body double. And that also, the same one exists for Avril Lavigne. Apparently, there's just a clone of Ara.
Yeah. What? And the Avril Lavigne one is actually quite sketchy.
Oh, go on.
I don't know it, the insides and outs, but I remember reading it and being like, actually, she might not be. I was going to quickly bring back to the alien one. There's this thing on YouTube, right, where there was this radio show, right, and they had people called in, and there's footage of this on YouTube, right, or audio footage, right, where the radio gets a call from this guy who's like, yep, I work in Area 51. I've just left my job in Area 51. There are aliens there. I've seen it. And as he's talking, the radio gets his call just gets shut off. And then the radio goes like, oh, I don't know what's happened there. And then the radio gets shut off, right? And then 3 minutes later, they come back on there and they're like, we don't know what just happened there. This is all on YouTube. They're like, we don't know what happened there and all this kind of stuff. And then apparently a week later, they had this same guy call in. The voice is slightly different though. And he's like, I was just lying. I was just trying to tell a joke or whatever to this radio station. And I think there's a little bit more about that story as well.
That's really good.
But honestly, watch it on YouTube. It's mental. It's ridiculous.
If I was working though, like at the radio station, I was like an intern, then like when somebody said something like, yeah, I've been at Area 51 and there are aliens, I would just like unplug everything. Like, this will be amazing. Like, I always thought this because I studied classics at uni. So I was doing like Latin and Greek. I always thought it'd be really fun when I had a child to just like teach it like some words in Latin and then like send it into a church just to like scream Latin words at people and they just think it's like possessed by the devil or something. And I thought that would be a really funny thing to do. So I do think like it's entirely possible as well that guy was like, you know what, I'm gonna ring up and say there are aliens at Area 51, and then just as they started to get interested, I'll just turn off my phone.
I can imagine you, Temps, Sunny, Kieran, all just settling in on a Friday night and just ploughing through conspiracy theories on YouTube. I can see it now. I can see you to do that.
We've not done it yet, but I may suggest it this weekend, to be honest, mate. We should definitely do a podcast where we should do an episode of the Anything But with just about conspiracy theories. We all bring our favourite three. And we discuss them.
All right.
Oh my god, that's a great idea.
My other favourite one I read quickly was that Finland was created by Japan. I don't know if anyone saw that, but apparently Finland doesn't actually exist. Apparently it's just like a fictitious country which the Japanese created in order to like fish in murky waters. So I mean, I've been to Finland, but I'm thinking twice whether or not I have been to Finland. Maybe I did. But yeah, if you read into it, this really exists. Apparently the Japanese and the Russians, it was like a co-conspiratory thing to create a fake area where they could like fish or something like that. So yeah, I mean, it's a bit far-fetched, but I like it.
Jeez. Yeah, I mean, especially given that like, yes, Finland has some coastline, but Japan is a bunch of islands.
It's
not hard to fish from Japan.
It's true. They do say, you know, out of all the Nordic Scandinavian countries, Finland is... it's a bit, something a bit funny over there. I'm telling you, it's a bit different. So.
Wow.
Well, yeah, the language is like totally different from like all the other Nordic countries, right? It's not Germanic. It's like related to Hungarian, I think. Though they also are really, really different, and like also, you know, quite a strong Nazi history in Finland.
Well, okay.
Yeah. All I'm saying is some wrong'uns.
They do speak in a very, very monotone way, so it does stink of something that's been programmed. You know, it does. There's a slight robotic. I just want to say
the fishing robot.
To any Finnish listeners, I think this is completely unfounded. Any of this conversation.
Did you ever hear about the Alex Jones theory that you came up with? That Michelle Obama is a man.
Oh, I thought this was going to be turning the frogs.
Oh,
game.
No. That was great. No, he said that Michelle Obama's a man and that he murdered Joan Rivers. Mental.
What?
I know.
Why?
I don't know. Apparently Obama was trying to have her assassinated for some reason.
Oh, my God. That's so good.
Oh, God.
Well, oh, God. There are some conspiracy theories that you really... they would be a more magical world if they were true.
So there's a long running joke in my family, because my dad and I love him to dear, but we don't share many of the same hobbies or interests or anything like that. So like growing up, there was a big joke that I was a love child of Princess Diana and someone else, because my mum used to work.
Oh, sure.
My mum used to work in a hospital, and she met her once, and I used to. Because me and my dad, whenever we used to fall out, it's like, well, you're not my real dad. I know that.
everyone has thought that they are adopted. I, for a year, I was like, I think I'm adopted.
Yeah, it's true. There's conspiracies everywhere, I'm telling you. It's true.
Oh, my God. Wow. Well, I think that's all we've got time for on today's show. But please, by all means, create the Wikipedia page for Henry and Zach's suspect parents. We would really appreciate that. And let us know if you would like to see us do a whole episode of the podcast just about conspiracy. You know what? I swear there used to be a conspiracies podcast. But yeah, anyway, thank you very much for joining me on today's show, guys. Is there anything that you would like to plug coming up on our channels?
Well, over on YouTube, make sure you check out We Need to Talk every Friday. There is a special We Need to Talk that I'm currently doing at the moment that I can't give away just yet, but I may be talking to a very, very special man. Yeah. Also,
wow. Check. Is it Michelle Obama?
It's not. But also check us out on Snapchat as well, where we bring you guys daily content, keeping you up to date with transfers and stories. Oh, that was very good.
Oh,
Emma.
God. Oh, we'd like to give all our love and support to Michelle
Yes,
Obama.
We do.
How dare Alex Jones. And thank you very much for watching, guys, or listening if you were listening to us on the podcast, listening to us as an audio podcast. Please make sure that you do subscribe to the podcast as well as watching the YouTube video. It really helps us out. And thank you again to Beer 52. Make sure that you get your 8 beers for only the cost of packaging. £5.95 for 8 beers. Go to beer52.com/extra and we'll see you next time. Bye.
It's extra time.
He shoots and it's a goal.